Code Mobile Weekly Podcast. My name is Steve Westgarth and I'm going to be your host for the next 30 minutes. Each week on the Code Mobile Weekly Podcast, I'm joined by somebody who is working in the mobile space. Today, I'm joined by Louis Resende, who is a Xamarin developer working for Car Finance 24/7 in Manchester. So, hello Louis, how are you?
Hi Steve, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for stepping in at short notice as well. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, great.
And actually, I mean, you messaged saying you were really interested in talking about Xamarin because obviously you're a Xamarin developer. I understand from the conversation we've just had that you used to be an iOS developer though, yeah?
Yes. So even though I'm doing Xamarin now, I'm still focused on iOS.
So it's interesting you say that because from my point of view, I've spent years advocating that native development is the way that everybody should be going, and I've vehemently resisted your sort of cross-platform development, hybrid apps, and all of those sorts of things. So you've obviously made that step. You've decided that you're going to go into the cross-platform world, and I'm very interested to discuss with you, why you've made that decision. So yeah, why did you decide to start going over to the dark side, as it were?
that's a good one. I was with you on that at my previous company back in Bristol. We used to discuss this every now and then, like, we're a small company, should we maybe start looking into hybrid development? And at some point I had like some free time that I could like just use for R&D basically, so I looked into Xamarin and React Native. I think the focus was those two. I knew a bit about Cordova already, which is not my favorite one, really. It's a lot of web for Cordova. So at that point, I told my boss at the time, like, if we are going ahead with this, me personally would like to do Xamarin, basically. It's more familiar. Obviously, you're using C#, but at least from the iOS side, it's fairly similar. So like all the names for the methods, all that, it's fairly similar. So it wasn't too bad. And obviously, when you start doing a project, someone has to do like the shared code. So let's say I start that, do the shared code, do the iOS bit, then it's much easier for whoever's going to do Android to just do the Android bit. And cool. Yeah, obviously, I discussed this when I joined Car Finance 24/7 because they were doing Xamarin instead of native development. And for them, it made perfect sense to use Xamarin. Firstly, because they are a Microsoft company, so everything is C#, basically. All the services and products we have, everything C#. And that kind of give it that nudge to start, because obviously Microsoft bought Xamarin and they were doing everything in C#, so they just like decided, well, we're already using C#, so for us that don't have knowledge about app development, might be easier to start.
So were you a .NET developer prior to your developing mobile apps, or what's your background with Microsoft?
No background at all, basically.
Okay, cool. So why in that case did you decide that, you know, because obviously for your Xamarin is as you say, very Microsoft based. So for you, why was Xamarin the product of choice? Because there are many other options out there if you're going to go down the hybrid route.
Yeah, so my choice on that was the similarity of how you do it in C#. It's really similar. If you're just doing an iOS app using Xamarin, for some reason, because obviously, if you do, because on Xamarin you can do like with Xamarin Forms, so you can do the whole app in Xamarin Forms, and at the end you get an Android, an iOS app, and the only thing you did was C# code, in a way. While when you want to do Android and iOS separately, you can do code. It's always C#, but on Android it's similar to Java, and on the iOS side, similar to Swift. Okay. So when I was looking at the different possibilities, this one was the easiest for me to set up and to understand because it's so similar. While I struggle with React Native, for example, like all the setup I had to do, and then things didn't work, and then actually creating a view was much harder, more complex, because it's more similar to JavaScript than actually Swift. So yeah, for me, that was the reason, really. I didn't have experience with C Sharp professionally, but I studied at uni, and I quite liked it. It's quite a good language. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I'm a .NET developer by background. I've been developing .NET probably for 10, 12 years now. But I've also, at the point that Apple released the iPhone, as soon as, we were able to start submitting apps for the App Store, I was very much on that buzz. And I think, I decided to go down the native route and have kind of stuck to the native route. And I've always had this perception, and potentially it's a wrong perception, perhaps you can correct me on this, that if you develop an app natively, you're able to give the user a better experience. Because I think as things like PhoneGap and all those sorts of things came out, there was an example that was used. I went to a conference a few years ago, and there was a guy there who was giving a talk, and there'd been an experience where a large newspaper had developed their app using something like PhoneGap. And what they'd ultimately done was create an app that was neither a good experience for an iPhone user or a good experience for an Android user. So the example he gave was that on an iPhone, you typically have the back button in the top left-hand corner, whereas on an Android device, you typically have the back button actually on the device itself.
Yeah.
And what he'd found was that in the experience they created, they were giving Android users things that they weren't expecting. On an Android device, like for example a back button in the top left hand corner, and on an iOS device they were giving people things they weren't expecting on an iOS device because it was an Android. So as a result of that, they had made the decision that they had to go native. They had to build a native app that was bespoke to each of the individual platforms. And I've kind of stuck with that view ever since. That's kind of where I've been at. Now I understand with Xamarin though that you effectively tailor the experience to the individual. So you whilst you have this shared code base that you've already mentioned, you need some knowledge of iOS and some knowledge of Android because the UI elements are done independently. Maybe you could talk a little bit around that.
Yeah. So about what you're saying, you didn't say Cordova. I had some experience in that at the company I was back in Portugal. Because we started doing apps, and I was the only iOS developer. And at some point, some apps were quite small to justify having an iOS and an Android developer working on them. So we decided to use Cordova, and the Android developer took that task on, and it was awful. It was awful for him to make it look usable. And obviously the experience was really bad because it's like everything is web. So you get scrolling everywhere. You have to spend a lot of time making sure things don't, like weird things don't happen, like a web view zooming in, things like that. So yeah, it's awful. While on Xamarin, as you said, it can be bespoke. It can be tailored. So I don't know if you know this. I've said already that if you use Xamarin, you can use Xamarin Forms. So basically, you just have everything shared. So your views are shared, and the logic is shared. Obviously, it's C Sharp, so it uses MVVM. So yeah, if you just use Forms, if it's a fairly basic app, let's say like a calculator, something like that, yeah, you can do your view in Forms, have your logic in the core project. It won't be shared, it will just be the core project. And that's it. At the end, Xamarin in the background compiles everything into native code for Android and iOS, and that's it. Obviously for us, we started with just bespoke, so we were doing everything for Android, everything for iOS. The only thing that was shared was the logic. So all our view models were in the share project, and then all the views were in the Android and iOS project. And obviously you might say, yeah, it's bespoke for each one, but it's taking twice the time, or at least twice the people to do, which is one of the downsides, because like if you're doing hybrid, you want to save some time doing this. And one thing Microsoft did that we think it's really good, it's called embedded forms, where we have a mix. So if it's a fairly basic screen, we do it in forms, do it once, works in both, that's great. If it's something more complex, we do it separately. So you can get that feeling for the platform, basically. And actually, we released an update this week where you have, so our company, it's Car Finance. So we have our own car database, and you can look for cars in our app. And we redesigned the search results. And basically, on Android, you get those cards that are kind of native to Android. Well, before that wasn't happening. It was just a list more similar to iOS with just like a line dividing.
So you're able to customize the user interface to be what the user on an Android device would expect to see.
Yeah. So it's basically what you said.
No, that makes sense. And I guess that if you're able to do that, that gives the users a better experience. And obviously that you know, answers one of the major questions that I've got over why you would use a cross-platform approach. Again, this may be a misconception, and potentially you might be able to correct me on this. Does the app not run slower on the user's device?
So from our experience, we don't really have that problem. I mean, it might be possible that if you have like a really complex screen, that might happen. But for us, our app, doesn't seem to run slower.
But in fairness, if you had a particularly complex screen on a native app, I mean, you can write a native app badly and it could run slower.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I guess if you've conformed to good practice, then there's no reason. I guess what you're saying is that the app will work just as well as a native app.
Well, no, it's not an issue. But what I have to say about that is that so you do the code, or like if we do an iOS native view instead of using Xamarin Forms, we are still using Xcode. So create a nib file, put your elements on the screen, your constraints. So we do that, and we do the same for Android. What could happen that for us, that doesn't happen yet, is that when you create that view, but let's say when Xamarin converts something you do to native code, the way they do it might not be the right way. So let's say, I don't know, you make constraints in code. When they convert those constraints from the C# wrapper to native Swift constraints, they could do it wrong, basically. So, and then you get hit in performance. But for us so far, we didn't have that problem yet.
So is that the equivalent of if you say went online and searched for an Objective-C to Swift converter, for example? Is that essentially what Xamarin does at the point you compile the app into native code? It's simply an online converter or a inbuilt converter that converts the code, and it does the best job it can do.
It's kind of like that, yeah. In layman's terms, it's that. It might do some kind of optimization in the background that we don't see, but it's kind of that. So you do your whole app, and in the end, you still get a APK. And an IPA, so yeah, it converts the whole thing, what needs to be converted, because obviously if you do a view in Xcode, that's already native, there's nothing to convert there. But yeah, like all the shared code needs to be converted to Swift or Java. So yeah, in a way, layman's terms, that's what it does. Yeah, you do your app in C#, it converts everything, and in the end you get a native app. So that's what I was saying. Like in theory, since you get a native app in the end, it should be okay, unless they do something wrong, which for us so far hasn't been a problem.
So you mentioned there, you've mentioned a couple of times time saving has been one of the key reasons why you would do this. But then we've also went on to talk about how you still have to ultimately have the app compiled in Xcode and compiled in Android Studio. And actually, you might do some native development, on the back of having done the Xamarin bit. So how much time do you actually save? You know, if you take a typical app, are we saving 50% of time? Are we saving 25% of time? What's the actual time benefit of using Xamarin?
Well, for us at this point, if I had to guess, I'd say probably around 25%.
Which is actually quite significant in any project. I mean, if you can save 25% of development time, that is a big saving.
Yeah, the issue is that it's not linear. At least for us, it's not, because some things, like if it's on screen, even if it's a complex one or an easy one, doesn't matter. A new screen that we do, if we do it in forms, which will be shared in both, one person does it. And that's it. Like, other developer might need to tweak it here and there, but that's it, basically. If it's a native screen, we need at least two developers working on it. So it really depends on what we're doing. But yeah, I would say around 25%, because obviously, for me, those 25%, it's like the minimum, because all the logic of the app is shared, so that we only do that once ever. It doesn't matter if we do the screens once or twice, that logic is always shared. While if you have two apps, you need to duplicate the same logic on both apps. And that for us was actually an issue, because we get the logic from the server. So to get that logic from the server and then having to put it on two apps, that would be a bit time consuming. And since we are a Microsoft company, everything is done in C#. So like, all the different models that we have, we just create them once. And like, if an API has a model, we just import it like as a NuGet package, for example, and everything is using the same model, which is a big advantage, instead of like the API being in C#, PHP, something with a model, and then you download like a JSON, and then you populate your own model on the app with that JSON, and then you have a model on the iOS app, the Android app. So yeah, for us, it does save, I would say, at least 25% of the time on development.
Cool. So one of the things that we've been really interested in over recent years is adopting sort of test-driven development and an approach where we've started integrating continuous integration into our workflow. Is that something that's also compatible with Xamarin? I mean, how much of this process can you test? And then how much of the process can you automate in terms of your release cycle?
It's actually good. I don't think it's that much different from a normal release cycle for if you have two apps, Android and iOS. So code goes to GitHub, as most companies do, and from there we use Bamboo. Pretty sure you heard of that. So Bamboo gets the latest commit, compiles the app for Android and iOS, and that's it. In the end, you have the APK and the IPA. So for us, it's not a big deal.
Fantastic. Well, I guess, you know, we've talked a lot right there on the advantages of using Xamarin. I mean, I guess that the fact you're working with it on a day-by-day basis means you obviously think there are a lot of advantages, but there must be some drawbacks. So what do you perceive are the drawbacks of using Xamarin?
Yeah, it's like, it's hard because I work with it every day. Obviously, initially, it was a bit strange, obviously. I think my struggle is like, even if you use Xcode every day, there's always issues like Xcode crashes, things like that. And like with Xamarin, you could say like that could happen. I don't know, Visual Studio hangs or crashes. One thing, like it's not a big deal because of GitHub, but for example, you can use Visual Studio for Windows or for Mac, which have different line endings. So if we didn't have GitHub controlling that, that could be an issue, for example.
So on that, actually, one of the questions I would ask is that if you are developing an app for iOS and for Android using Xamarin, would you prefer to do it on a Windows machine or prefer to do it on a Mac? The reason I ask that is because if you have to do some native development in order to get it actually released, I guess there's it's better to develop potentially on a Mac because you can have all of the tools available. Yeah. Whereas obviously you can't have Xcode on a Windows machine.
Yeah, that's been one of my points for developers to use Macs. It's because you can have everything. So it's easier for me on a Mac to have Windows running with Parallels than for someone on Windows to have a Mac running. So obviously, if you are on Windows and you need to deploy to a simulator? It's possible, but you need a remote machine to do it, which is a bit annoying. Just like on the drawback, sorry, just to go back, because I don't want people to think like, oh, it does Xamarin, so it's the best thing in the world. So it's possible that because you are doing shared development, sometimes you want to use Xamarin Forms, for example, and because Xamarin Forms supports Windows, Android, and iOS, it's hard to have a default component that fits all three. So obviously labels, buttons, table views, that's shared, but let's say, I don't know, a UI segmented controller. That's quite specific to iOS. So if you want to use that on shared code, you'll probably have to use a custom renderer. So you create a placeholder control in Forms, and then you implement what you want that control to be in the native platforms. So on iOS, obviously, it's just putting a UI segmented control on the screen. On Android, you might have to create it yourself. So that could be a drawback. It's not too bad, but at least there's a good way around offering the users native experience.
And another drawback that I would maybe consider is that if, let's say, we watch the latest Apple event or the latest Google event, and they release some new features, you know, in iOS development or in Android, I guess that it takes time for those features to become available in Xamarin.
They are honestly fairly fast. That was one of my questions when I joined the company, like, are we going to wait around new features to be implemented? But no, they are quite fast. Usually when the betas start coming out, they start releasing updates. So obviously if you want early access, you just change Visual Studio to the beta channel or maybe the alpha channel, and you get access to these new features. Not on the same day. Honestly, I never checked, but give it a week or two and you'll get access to them. And as more beta releases come out, they keep updating it. And for sure, when the final iOS version is released, there will be an update to Visual Studio with the latest SDK, basically. So yeah, you might have to wait a couple weeks. Honestly, I never checked that, but it's fairly fast to be implemented in Xamarin.
Have you ever had a situation where a feature hasn't been implemented in Xamarin that you really want to see?
I don't think so. No, so far I don't think so.
Well, that's obviously good to know that, you know, the Xamarin developers and Microsoft, I guess, are very much behind it in terms of keeping up with the trends, which is very important to have. I mean, I guess that there could be a situation where Xamarin is discontinued potentially by Microsoft. I mean, is that something that could happen? And would that you know, cause problems for you in the future?
Well, it would be really annoying.
I guess more than a little bit. Whereas, you know, we all have a dependency on Apple in terms of maintaining the iOS ecosystem, and also on Google maintaining the Android ecosystem. So does this introduce a third party or a third level of risk that we don't need?
Possibly, yeah. Obviously, for us, would be awful because we would have to basically rebuild the apps on both platforms. And like, other than the views, that we could use all the logic, and it's quite a lot just to do that. It would take a long time. That would be really bad. And actually, I got a bit worried, I think, last year, at the end of the year or early this year, because there was those talks about Apple cutting back on some apps. And at some point, people were thinking they were targeting like React Native and Xamarin. So got a bit worried about that. But I think it was more to do with just apps that do the same thing everyone else does. It was more to do with that than actually apps that use third-party things for development. So, yeah. Like, Xamarin's been going strong. Like, Microsoft bought it, and they have increased the size of the teams they have, because obviously you need someone to maintain Visual Studio, especially for Mac, because it's quite recent, and then iOS and Android and all that. So they seem quite invested. So honestly, I'll be surprised if in the near future they close the project. But like with these big companies, you never know. So we have to wait and see, but for now, things look good, honestly.
So I guess you're being a now a Xamarin developer, but still a mobile developer. You very much keep your eyes on what's happening in the mobile development space. We've obviously got a very exciting event coming up. It's Apple's October event this Tuesday.
Yes.
So, what do you think is going to be the big announcements from Apple? What's your predictions if you had to give some?
Well, I really want to see the new iPad, if it's anything like the rumors suggest. So that kind of edge-to-edge screen, but with no notch. I think that would be an amazing update. Because obviously, for me, like the iPad is the best tablet you can buy. Even though the Surface is quite good, honestly, I still think the iPad is the best. And but it's starting to look a bit dated because since the first since the first one, it kind of looks always the same.
It does. It hasn't really moved
Externally,
on with
obviously.
design, has it?
So if they actually do this edge-to-edge screen, I think that would be really an amazing step. And I'm curious because the rumors, obviously, that's the only thing we have to go on. Some say they will need Lightning for USB-C. Some say it might have both, even though I'm not sure how that would work out. But yeah, even though like it sucks for older users, I think they should really go to USB-C, especially because with Lightning, I don't think they even support USB 3 yet. I don't see the point of this connector, honestly. And
I
USB-C
totally agree
obviously
with you.
can have Thunderbolt as well. So that would be great to see, and especially because the MacBooks only have USB-C. So
I think it's only a matter of time before Apple adopt USB-C. I think if it doesn't happen at this event, it will happen very, very soon. I think that the fact that they've embraced USB-C so vehemently in the MacBook Pro, I think that they would see USB-C as being the future, and I think it standardizes. It starts to standardize the industry, and it's a move that I actually thought Apple wouldn't do. Because I mean, Apple have always historically been very much about we'll do it our way and we'll stick things the way that we want to keep things.
Yeah, but
And I was surprised at the point that they got rid of the Thunderbolt connector in favor of USB-C. But I think now they've made that move, it really is only a matter of time before USB-C becomes the default charging point on all of their devices.
yeah, so like you are absolutely right on that. Like they usually say, we'll go with this, and this is the way, and then people usually follow what they do. But like I'm pretty sure they were one of the strong forces behind USB when it came around. Like, no one was really pushing USB, and they started it. And so, seems a bit weird that now there's USB-C, and they are still stuck with Lightning on the phones, at least. Correct. I don't know if you know this, but I'm pretty sure they were behind USB coming to the mainstream.
I think they were. I think that's absolutely right.
No, like. Yeah, they were behind USB. They pushed it, and now USB-C, it's great, and they are not really pushing it other than the MacBooks. So, yeah, I think in the future, everything will be USB-C for Apple.
And the other thing that's been rumored is that on the iPad, we're going to get more desktop-like features. You're almost kind of turning the iPad into a more desktop type device. Now, I mean, that's been talked around for years, and I've always said, no, that's not the way iPad's going. We already have a whole suite of Mac-based products that are desktops, and that's what they're for. The iPad has a very different space. But what's your view of that? Is that something that could potentially come true?
Well, I think it could, but like there's been talks about Xcode for the iPad. Honestly, I think that's probably unlikely. Because if you compare, for example, like Photoshop, yeah, it's available. I'm pretty sure you can get it on iPhone and iPad, but it's like a subset of features. Because obviously, you don't have the same power. As good as the A chips are, they are not as good as a Intel Core i7, things like that. So, for an iPad to actually run Xcode, and obviously you have to think about the experience as well. I don't see it as a good experience. I'd much rather have a keyboard and a mouse to work on Xcode or Visual Studio, doesn't matter. Then, because on an iPad, in theory, you'd use your finger to move things around, press buttons. So yeah, I think it's really unlikely. The whole thing, the experience, what you could do, I'm pretty sure if you put the Xcode as it is right now on an iPad, even on the latest chips, it would still struggle.
Yeah,
like you open Storyboard on the Mac, and sometimes the Mac struggles. So for an iPad to do that, I think it's a bit unlikely that Apple will go that way.
I totally agree as well, and I think, you know, from a user's experience point of view, you know, as a developer, I'm always looking for more screen real estate. You know, I can't have enough screens to sort of spread myself out. And I think the idea of condensing myself down to the size of an iPad screen, even an iPad Pro screen, is just, it's just not feasible. I don't think I could be productive in that space doing the sort of development that I do. I would find that very challenging.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But, well, I don't know. Apple does what they want, so...
No, that's very true. They do. They will always go their own way. They will always, you know, they will never be pressurized into going a way that Apple doesn't believe in. I guess in that sense, we can only just wait and see. Do you get the sense that there will be another one more thing at this Apple keynote, or is this just going to be a run-of-the-mill update?
Well, it could be a one more thing, even though it seems weird to do it that way. But maybe the Mac Mini.
Yeah, maybe.
A refreshed Mac Mini.
It would be lovely to see that, because it's been many, many years since we've had a new Mac Mini.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Mac Mini, for me, when that came out, that was a brilliant device.
Yeah.
You know, and I still actually have a Mac Mini here now that I still use, and it would be lovely to have a refreshed Mac Mini with new updated hardware.
Yeah, like with a Mac Mini, some people even buy the, not the latest one, but the previous model, because you can upgrade components on that one. And so there's Mac Mini still going this day. And the thing is, it's much cheaper than an iMac, and you get to pick your screen. Like, some people don't like the iMac, and you don't need, not everyone needs 5K. So you could buy a cheaper Mac, so, because the Mac Mini usually, it's a bit cheaper. And it's still a good machine. Like, I've developed on a Mac Mini, and obviously the latest model is like 2012. So yeah, it was still fairly good. And then you get to pick the monitor you think it's good for you. A glossy one, matte one, it's up to you. So it's more flexible.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think that would be good. Although, obviously, if they release a new one, everything will be soldered to the board, so no upgrades after you buy it.
No, it'll be very interesting to see. I can't wait for the Apple event. I think you know, it's a bit of theatre that I look forward to. And I mean, there are obviously several throughout the year, and I always watch it live just to see what's going to happen. And
yeah,
I think it will be a fantastic event on Tuesday, so very much looking forward to that. But Louis, it's been fantastic talking to you today. Thank you very much for joining me on the Cord Mobile Weekly Podcast. If anybody has been listening and maybe they've been really inspired by some of the things you've been talking about in Xamarin, or you know, any of the other insights you've had, and they want to reach out to you and get in touch, are you on Twitter? How can they get in contact with you?
Twitter is fine.
what's your Twitter handle?
It's PACHA56.
it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Lewis.
Me too.
And thank you very much for all of your insights. And you know, who knows, maybe in the near future I might even give Xamarin a go and see if I can come to my own view on whether cross-platform actually has a way to go.
Yeah, give me a shout.
I will, and I'll let you know how successful that is. And maybe we'll come back together on a future podcast and talk about how successful my attempt at Xamarin have been.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, just let me know.
I will do. So you've been listening to the Cord Mobile Weekly Podcast. The Cord Mobile Weekly Podcast comes out every Sunday. So please do reach out to us on Twitter. We are Cord Mobile UK. It would be great to know if you have any thoughts or insights on how the podcast's been. Please do also let us know if you know anybody who would like to talk on the podcast, or maybe you've got something interesting to say, just as Louis has today. So thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.